Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
Coach, we have to come in with the fight song. That's a huge win for you guys, my friend. You got the standing ovation here from the morning staff. Yeah. That had to feel pretty good. That's like a parade right there.
It feels good, but you know me well enough to know now that, like, I just think about all the times when I have come in after losses and there's no standing ovation.
And now the expectations are going to be,
right,
we need to do that all the time,
yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah, and you know, kind of. As I've explained to you before, you know, winning to most coaches, there's just not that elation, really. It's there's maybe some relief, and there's a real happiness, like, for the players, but on a personal level, it's just really relief. You know,
I want to get into the game. This was one of maybe the biggest wins, maybe, in UNC football history since joining Division I FCS. But I always think about you, especially this season, you know, three wins now. I remember last year you guys beating Weber State, and that was a huge win because Weber State was ranked at the time, I believe. You talked about that. Like, after the win, it was more like just relief, and then also a feeling of how do we keep going? How hard it is to get a win. So with you, it wasn't like this overdrive. We got the win. We finally got on the win column. It wasn't that. It was more of a almost stressed out because, oh man, we got to chase that feeling. We got to keep that going. And now you're kind of, I mean, here you are, you're sitting at 3-3. And I think even the losses are what's worth talking about because you guys have been in every single game, but you're saying it again. You know, it's like, it's more relief than it is pure joy, which is interesting to me.
Yeah. Relief and focus. You know, every win or loss, just concentrates the importance of the next game. You know, when you lose, you want that winning feeling so badly. And in the case of, like, coaches, we want it for the guys that are out there working so hard and doing the on-field work. You know, mm-hmm. I'm the same coach on the sideline. You know what I mean? I haven't changed. I haven't changed our philosophy. I haven't changed our culture. I'm doing the same things. And so when we win, I just feel such gratitude to the players and excitement for them.
And this was what an amazing football game for you guys. I mean, I obviously watched on Saturday, but I went back. You can watch it, you can watch the encore on ESPN Plus, commercial free. And then you can kind of fast forward and skip through some of the, you know, the in between plays and all that. But I mean, you guys just controlled this thing from right off the bat. I mean, some great drives, excellent defensive stops early. This was just kind of from start to finish. Obviously they get that run game going, but for the most part, this was kind of a dominating football game for you guys. And Idaho was, I believe, were they 11th at the time when you guys, played them? Is that right?
Yes.
11th. And you guys controlled this football game.
Right. And so I'll qualify my remarks or conversation with, you know, we put a gold brick up for this game. Any wins over ranked teams or FBS teams or playoff opponents. And so I painted that gold brick on Sunday so that when the players arrived in on Monday, it would be done and finished. So that on Tuesday afternoon, which is the first time I really speak to the whole team as a team, I reminded them, the gold brick is up there, and it'll be up there when you bring your kids back. That is a program changer. That's a program builder, and that's what those gold brick games represent. But that's rearview mirror stuff.
Yeah.
We glance at it once in a while. It's there, we're looking ahead. So I have to qualify all that just in case any of the players are listening, because we're in our facility. We're not talking about the Idaho game, We're not watching the replay. I'm thrilled that you are.
Which is always tough because we do this on a Wednesday.
So typically
you've already turned the page. But for me, like sports talk guy,
right.
we're not turning the page until Friday. We'll start really looking at Sac State and everything.
Right.
But it's just so exciting. Coach, I've told you this before. You know, back in 2005, I was a freshman at UNC and I was writing for the UNC Mirror and I sat down with Kay Dalton and I just remember talking to him in his office, and him telling me people don't realize how difficult the transition from D2 to D1 FCS is going to be. It's going to be very tough. And if only we knew, because it has been very tough. I mean, I'm looking at it. This has got to be one of the biggest wins in UNC football history since FCS. This Bears team, I mean, it hasn't won four games since 2016. Looking at that, I don't know this for sure. I know Ernest Collins Jr. had two seasons where he won six games, but I don't know that they received votes. If they did, it was maybe once or twice. You guys are receiving votes for the top 25. I mean, this is insane. I mean, I know it's a long season, but for us, this is the most excited and I think talked about this football team has ever, you know, has ever had since joining FCS. It's really cool. It's really special. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around.
Yeah, and in some ways, me too, because it was so elusive. Like, I came with a plan. You were there on day one, first press conference. And it was to be foundationally based on high school local recruiting, Colorado high school recruiting. And I never have wavered on that. After a winless first season, we still doubled down and recruited high school kids first from the state of Colorado. And then in year three, after one or third year of recruiting, this past offseason, we did the same thing. I've always known that we would break through, but it's been so frustrating not to find ways to break through sooner. Mm-hmm. And in my darkest moments, there has been, not doubt about where the program would be, but just the timeline of it and how much heartache there was for the players and coaches and families and anybody who cares, you know, who's following with really their heart in it. So
we were getting plenty of screenshots of asparagus yesterday during the whole show, Coach, because people go back to that opening press conference. Yeah. And you saying it takes, 2 to 3 years before?
Yeah, it's year three when you harvest the
start. And you said that.
Yeah.
And here we are, year three. And it's just interesting because people are really connecting.
That's cool.
And following you and what you're doing. I'm seeing it in the state, you know, from a lot of state people too, outside of Greeley, outside of even the Northern Colorado market. Suddenly people are starting to pay attention. And that's what I'm saying when I know you don't pay attention to that stuff, but we start to see it here. Yeah, the basketball team has received some of that. Wrestling, obviously. Andrew Olirez is really big, been a national name. Volleyball's been excellent. But the football side, aside from the day they announced hiring Ed McCaffrey, which was that sexy name in the state of Colorado, I don't know that there's been a buzz around UNC like this, which there should have been with your background and everything. But that's how this area is. This market is a big name pops for a little bit. So this is just such a really fun time. I don't know what's going to happen the rest of the season, but for now, it's really exciting for fans of the Bears.
Yeah, we're going to find out. We're going to find out about our maturity this week because Sacramento State, in a lot of ways, the most talented team in our conference. They're the number one rushing team. They're the number one sack and tackle for loss team, and highly rated in the nation for those in the top 1 or 1 to 15 in almost all of those categories where really athletes start to show up. So for all the time that I've been here, me and our players have looked at those other sports in our department and those other coaches and envious of what they've been able to achieve at UNC because we're all in the same boat here. I mean, our university is struggling for resources and disadvantaged in competition with our peers in the Big Sky.
Yeah,
we've strived as a university well before my time and before your time. We've strived to be bigger than maybe we should be, and that's so commendable. And now to be not just here, but a part of that story and maybe inspirational if some of our other sports now and athletes and coaches can look at football and say, well, even football is now, mm-hmm. you know, has a chance to be successful. I think that's huge. But we've got to take this all in the context that it deserves. I mean, we sit here at 3-3, and there's excitement, and the team that we're playing has won three championships in the Big Sky in the last 5 years, and they're 3-3 in Hungary. So it's and we're playing at their place. There's a lot on the line here,
and they're receiving votes too. So, you know, depending on how everything goes, teams above in the top 25 lose, whatever, the winner of this game may very well be in the top 25, which would also be a first.
Yeah, there's kind of a, you know, as you know, the Big Sky is you know, like the Big Ten or the SEC of FBS football, and we're going to get 4 to 5 teams in the playoffs. Right now we sit at tied for fourth place, but there are, I think, 3 or 4 teams tied for fourth place, and Sacramento State is one of those. And the winner of this game will really jump into that, you know, second place type of position or one game back, and with a lot of momentum to finish out the season. So it's a monumental game. I wish it were at home, but we can, you know, if we can go and be successful on the road, then it will set up maybe another environment like we had at homecoming, where there were so many people interested in, let's come see this team in person.
Yeah.
And I told you after that loss to Idaho State that I felt like it was such a such a missed opportunity for our program. And it was hard to come back from that. But obviously our guys responded well, and we're ready to play hard in the next game.
You guys, I just like bringing these little notes up. You guys were, I think, 20-point underdogs, by the way. Against Idaho. I don't know if you knew that.
Somebody won some money.
I took you guys to cover. I mean, I think you guys can win a lot of games. So I looked at that when we do our picks on Friday. I'm like, that's easy. Yeah. You guys have been in every single football game. So that was an easy one. But that's just phenomenal. You've had a lot of that this season.
Yeah, my overall record is here is embarrassing. But I knew what I was taking over, you know, and I knew that there would be some heartache that way. I, at this point in my career, you know, just the way that it started out at Southern Utah, which was another really difficult job and difficult turnaround. My overall win-loss record is not something that's setting records, right? But our record there and here against the spread is pretty dang good.
It's pretty darn good.
And
yeah.
And that's what happens when you're building a program is, you know, if people just don't respect you, like, you know, like Gandhi said, first they laugh at you and then they fight you and then you win.
You said something at the end of the game in your post game comments. You said, "We're not sneaking up on anybody anymore."
Right.
I think that's very true.
Yeah.
I mean, you got big names on this roster, big guys that are making waves, being talked about defensively, offensively too, special teams. You're not. That's out the window now.
Right.
Yeah. There's no more basement Bears coming in, you know, trying to upset somebody.
Sure. And, you know, with coaches, that's never the case because the coaches just study the film in a different way.
Yeah.
And you'll hear a lot of coaches. I try to use opponents' names when I'm talking about their players. A lot of coaches will stick with numbers, and that's a conscientious effort to just make sure that it's not about the logo, it's not about the color, it's not about the record. You're just watching the opponent to try to teach your team about the opponent. And so I know that coaches don't, you know, generally overlook, but you'll hear players, you know, say things like, well, you know, when we're supposed to win, or you're playing the easy team, or this is the hard team. It's kind of they apply a lot of times when we're younger, we apply that transitive property. So like, okay, we beat Idaho. Who did they beat?
And
we're better than those teams. No, we were better than Idaho on one day, and that's it. And that itself is worth fighting for every week.
Well, let's talk about the start of this game. I mean, you go down, you march right down the field. I think an 11 play drive, you go score a touchdown. Then you get the interception, which was just a wrestling match for the football, and you go down, you get a field goal, I think a 52-yard field goal from Willig. It was like, that sequence to me, all three phases, you guys, that was all. I looked at this game and I said, man, the Bears might win this thing.
Right.
You score on offense, you have a perfect drive, you get a turnover quickly, and then Willig comes in and launches a long field goal, and all three phases right off the bat, this Bears team is cooking.
Yeah, it was a boxing match, and just like round one being that offensive drive, just a pummeling. I mean, very few third downs. The one third down we did have was the biggest moment in the game, maybe the season, when Eric Gibson tucked it, got vertical, didn't slide, put the ball away, two hands on it. He's had a couple of fumbles this year, put two hands on it. trucked the defender, got vertical, got the first down. When the tip, you know, the slide would have put him short of the first down. He had three defenders converging on him with good angles. And the whole defense just rose up off the bench in that moment because then there was that feeling of, okay, we've got a team here. You know what I mean? We're not just going to fight to the end and try to keep it close with great defensive effort. Like, these guys are marching and they're making it look easy. And then, when that touchdown was punched in and then, you know, round two starts and they come out and it's like just boom. We got a knockdown in round two, you know, like right away. First play interception, Daryl Bryant.
Just
tremendous job.
Ripping that. I didn't think that was an interception. And I kept watching the replay over and over. It's, wow, that was a man interception right there.
Yeah, I think he had hands on it first.
Yeah.
Great job by the Idaho defender. Well, great job by on the disguise, first of all. That was a man alignment zone defense. And the first three steps of every player in our secondary were man to man steps. Mm-hmm. And then they transitioned into a zone and got the quarterback, caught the quarterback off guard. So he thought, the quarterback thought that receiver was wide open. Daryl was sitting right there in the zone and made a great break on the ball. And then Idaho comes back as a great opponent will. They came back out on defense and they pushed us backwards, right? And then it was like we stole the third round with this huge 52-yard field goal, clutch field goal by, you know, the field goal team, as any kicker will tell you. There's a lot of execution on that. And to take that 2-score lead that early in the game was really a tone setter.
And you didn't slow down. I mean, third quarter was interesting, but what I love too is how you finished in the fourth quarter. I think you guys scored 14 in the fourth. And getting another Cam Chapa getting an interception. I think he's co-defensive player of the week in the Big Sky Conference. It just had a lot of special drives, special moments, but also players on this team. You can really see the belief, the buy-in. You see Gibson's running. You got the defense cheering. That juices them up. That pumps them up to go do what they need to do on the other side.
Yeah, with the game on the line, it was not just a 14-point fourth quarter. Like, probably had every opportunity to punch in the 21st point there. I mean, we tried to take a knee twice because we were in victory. Now, they had timeouts, but they weren't using them. And so I thought, all right, well, the thing to do here is get everybody out of the game and do the classy thing. And then all of a sudden we got into victory and they called a timeout. So then we, okay, well, like, get after
let's
it.
Let's go.
You know, and maybe some people think, oh, he called a deep pass. Like, you don't call a deep pass. You call a pass play. And then if the deep receiver is open, you throw the deep one. But there were shorter routes on that play. But, yeah, got it down inside about the 10-yard line or so with plenty of time left. And we had all three of our timeouts. So that, to me, was an indication of, hey, this wasn't just like a fortunate start, got some turnovers.
Right.
Like, with the game on the line and 10 points, the Bears pulled away and then could have hung 50 on those guys. Just
49 points. That's another one. I don't know the last time I've seen UNC score 49 points.
Well, yeah, there have been some real challenges. I mean, even like year one was year one, but even that year we lost Jacob Sermon just past halfway point in the season, our starting quarterback. And in the last 2 years, we've only played five quarters with our first team quarterback. And we don't talk like that around the facility, right? Like Eric Gibson is our first team quarterback right now. And that's how Peter would say it. Peter Castelli would say it and everything. So I don't want to make it sound that way, but their coach after the game was kind of like, yeah, well, you know, we're on our second QB. And I say, I know how that feels, man.
You were on your 18th that was millionth last year. I mean, now you're on your second.
Yeah. That was our second out there too. And, you know, good luck next week kind of thing.
Was that really the conversation at the end? Did he really say, well, we were without our second quarterback?
Yes. Yes. But I don't want to say it like that. There were, as all coaches are, he was very complimentary of our team. And, he said, most physical team we faced, and the Bears were physical that night, even till the final touchdown there where Brandon Johnson like sought contact over the goal line. I mean, there were some very, very physical play all over the field, offense, defense, and special teams. I'm proud of the team for that. It's nice to see that showing up, all that work in the weight room and all of that work on the practice field on the fundamental techniques of being physical.
Can we talk? Let's talk about Eric Gibson Jr. a little bit. Obviously, we've discussed, you know, the position he was put in. Castelli goes down again. It's very difficult. But this guy's putting up big numbers, and we'll talk about that wide receiver duo. Getting Braden Monroe back was nice. That's a nice little bonus there. But this guy has not only been a good, hey, come in here, don't lose the game. He's had some fumbles. He's had some, as we talked about, he's had some turnovers. But he's been making some special throws in that game, especially. He had some really nice throws.
Yeah, well, for a backup quarterback to get his opportunity, and then to show some promise. I mean, it's some great moments from the first time he stepped in the game at Chadron, and then at Colorado State really led us to an opportunity there to win the game late. I mean, he's had so many great, impressive moments to be proud of, but he just keeps doubling down on improvement. Mm-hmm. And in that way, he's been such a leader for our team, and he's vocal about it. I'll give you one story about Eric. In the spring, there's an incumbent starter, Peter Castelli. Our offense is completely designed around the plus one running game, and Peter is a true dual threat quarterback. We like him as a passer. We like him as a runner, and so when you have that, there's going to be a big component of your offense that's QB carries, designed QB carries. Well, Eric's can run the football, but he's not going to see himself as a dual threat quarterback, and it's a little different. So we had to make a real pivot on the bye week when we have time. The playbook, 40% of the playbook swapped out on the bye week, and I kept referring to that on the bye week. I didn't want to give too much away, but I said we're making a major pivot here. But I'll tell you one story about Eric that'll just kind of tell you everything about who he is. In spring practice, when, Peter was the starter, the offense was designed around Peter for the most part, and Eric was just doing the best he could, he came in after spring practice, as a lot of guys do. I said, "Coach, I'd like to meet with you." And most of them come in and say, how do I become the starter? How do I move up the depth chart? How do I earn a scholarship? Fair questions.
Yeah.
And I really respect any kid who has the humility and confidence to come in and ask me that. His question was the first time I ever got this. He said, "How do I become a better two? How do I be a better backup?"
Wow.
It was kind of...
I've never heard that before.
It was eye-opening.
Yeah.
Because that told me, okay, hungry. Hungry to get better. Hungry to improve. But completely bought into his role. And it was a real eye-opener. It took me a moment to kind of gather my thoughts, because my assumption was, how do I become a starter?
Yeah.
But he said, how do I become a better two?
That mentality, I'm going to note that, because that is a phenomenal little side story here,
right.
side mention of what he's been able to do.
We talk about, just controlling the things you can control. And there's no better way to say that than how do I become a better two?
Do you feel like with him, As his confidence grows, because we've seen it, I go back to the CSU game, it seemed like you guys offensively a little more conservative. Every game has felt like, at least from my perspective, things are just opening up more and more. Obviously, you're getting guys healthy too. That's a big part of it. But has that been part of the progression in your brain? As his confidence grows, the playbook offensively opens up a little bit, or is that just certain plays weren't connecting early, and that's why maybe that offense wasn't rolling? Because right now it just seems like every game there's more production.
Well, yes. So you've anyone who's paid attention, and we're here talking. You've heard me talk about over and over. Okay, how is a championship team built? A championship team is built with run game efficiency, with a balance, with the ability to run and throw the football at any moment. There are different ways to achieve that. We thought with, our roster coming into the season that the best way to achieve that was with multiple tight ends in the game, a quarterback that can give a plus one, and we've got some great deep ball threats.
Yeah.
So that was the playbook. And that's what you saw, in our first few games of the season when we were caught off balance a little bit, and Eric is coming in running that same playbook. Sure, we had a two-minute offense. We had the ability to spread it out, but we didn't have a lot of variety in that. And so, but the ability to, with the way that I'm foundationally grounded in coaching, we're not going to put in 20 new plays every week and then expect to execute at a high level. They're just the preparation week is too short. You get about 65 reps a day on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then that drops to about 40. You get about maybe 160 to 200 team reps. And this is everybody in football, pros, whatever, but a team 11-on-11 type, whether it's scout team or crossover, per week. And so to put in, you know, 20, 30 new plays and expect to execute that at a high level on a 1 week basis, that's not going to work. But on a bye week, you've got a big opportunity to make a pivot like that. And that's part of what happened there, is just really catering the offense. And then I love the way we passed the football and got vertical in the passing game and showed some variety in our quick game and side to side. But the thing I'm maybe most proud of about this last game is our run game efficiency skyrocketed. And so we were kind of, you know, throwing to open up the run. And I was really pleased with the way that the offensive line and the running backs were able to take advantage of some pass defenses.
Let's talk about the running back room, because you've been like this, you know, the last few years, where there people, if anyone asks, like, who's going to be the guy that gets the rock for UNC, I literally never know. Yeah. And you and I do this podcast, and, you know, I consider us, you know, pretty tight. I have no idea. How do the running backs handle that? Knowing that, hey, could be Brandon Johnson this time, could be Matthias Price. There's a lot of dudes on this team that can carry the rock, but you've always kind of had that mindset of who's breaking tackles, who's running harder. Those are going to be the guys. How are they handling that? Because you had a lot of guys carry the football over the weekend.
Yeah, Justin Gwynn was in there. Kyrius Boone is getting some of his first action. Rocco's been out, not with a season ender, but just a little bit hampered, and it's hard to stay up to speed in that room without being 100% full speed. So most of that is really left up to our running back coach. And we went into this season putting a lot of pressure on ourselves as coaches to say, name a number one every week. And so we do. If you were to ask me late in the week who the number one is, especially, you know, off the microphone, not that we're really trying to hide that, but
sure,
by the end of the week, we know who's practiced the best and we put a premium on that. We tried to get there a year ago with that same type of philosophy. And, you know, our backs were so different a year ago from each other that we had to kind of package them into their part of the game plan. This back, you know, I'm not going to name any names necessarily, but this back was the best at these types of plays, and this back was the best at these types of plays. Now we've got 5-6 guys. They can all catch. They all have quickness, but power, like, Kyrius Boone he's a water bug in his running style, but he's one of the strongest players in the nation pound for pound. And I'm talking NFL backs. Mm. Like, there is like just tremendous strength right there, in the way what he brings to the game. Same with Brandon Johnson. Obviously, Matthias brings a lot of power to the game, but he catches the ball out of the backfield. He's nifty with his feet, you know, knows how to move. There's just a lot of good options right there. And so running back by committee being a negative, it has now become a real positive. Every guy knows they start the week with the opportunity to be the number one ball carrier, and they've responded in the right way.
I saw something on UNC's Facebook page. I don't have it in front of me, Coach, but it was, you know, when you're throwing out the award, like, hey, who the linebacker of the game? This was the backfield of the game.
Yes.
And I thought that was unique. Talk to me a little bit about that, because it was pretty much everybody involved in the run game.
Yeah, I mean, Matthias Price, 2 touchdowns, but I don't think was in the top 2 or 3 on total rushing yards. One of his touchdowns was on a catch. Kyrius Boone, he brought so much to the team. It's inspirational to see him out there with the way Brandon Johnson finished off the game. Justin Gwynn was in early and got, on that first drive, there were 16 yards after contact by not just our backs, but receivers, Carver, Eric Gibson, as I mentioned, Gwynn. And so, it was really hard when we sat there as a staff and said, okay, who's the running back of the game? And obviously the biggest voice on that's going to be Terrence Grant, our running backs coach. But he just said right away, like, you gotta give it to all of them. And the biggest indication of that, if you were able to go back and watch the game, and I don't have time to do that, but, and I don't know if the television copy, where the cameras were, et cetera. But I mean, when one of those guys makes a play in the game, the other 4 or 5 are all up off the bench and, you know, dancing, cheering, jumping around. So it's a unified group. They all want to play more. Everybody wants to get the rock. But I think they're completely bought into the fact that their number of carries is up to them.
Well, and that's the thing. You have to have that buy-in from these guys, because on any given week, Saturday, it's going to vary, and it's going to depend a lot of how you practice, how you start the game too. So, you know, initially when I saw that, that was interesting to me. But then if you watch the game, it's hard to pick out just one guy because everybody had their moments, whether it was receiving the ball or running the ball or blocking, whatever. They all had their moments.
My pregame message at the hotel, and I kind of give two pregame speeches, and they're not necessarily motivational in comparison with some of these coaches who are going to like work up a sweat and kick the garbage can and all that stuff during the pregame speech. But mine was about we go as the sideline goes, and I told the coaches in front of the players, stop coaching these guys to a bloody stump during the game. If we're making mistakes during the game, those are things we should have corrected during the week. Mm-hmm. So let's let these guys enjoy the moment, make some quick corrections, get them off the bench, let them watch the game, let them watch the other side of the ball. And, boy, everybody responded to that. And that's what I was kind of alluding to with the running backs is like nobody's on the bench, you know, pouting or saying, boy, if I was in there, this is what would happen. And a big part of that is just starting hot on mm-hmm. offense and defense. If you're a backup and you're the guy that's in front of you is out there making plays, it's a lot easier to buy in.
Well, two other guys that have certainly bought in, Carver Cheeks, Braden Monroe, yeah. Monster games from yeah. them. Carver with 9 catches, 120 yards. Braden had the 5 for 151 in the touchdown. But man, talk about a duo, a wide receiver duo right there. Makes Eric Gibson Jr.'s life a lot easier too, having guys like that.
And again, it's the understanding of what it takes to be a team. If you only have one receiver, they've got a great chance to be All-American and you just keep throwing it to him. But they're going to face some coverages that are tilted toward them. You got to cover Braden. You got to cover Carver. You got to cover Charlie. You got to cover Dawson Menegatti.
He's been excellent too.
Yes, and they all have roles. And then there are some big names still waiting. You know. River Stout is ready to come in on the outside. Luke Wooten on the inside. I mean, Fisher Clements, yeah. right? Fisher's working through a minor injury. He'll be back. You know, we got Hank Gibbs at tight end. You know, so there's a lot of depth right now that we haven't enjoyed. And so many of those guys, you know, those three receivers, the three that start the game at the receiver position, Carver Cheeks, Dawson Menegatti, and Braden Monroe. Colorado kids.
Yeah.
And who else is doing that in our conference? I mean, it's so encouraging to me to see the plan come through. And it's exactly what we talked about. Those three guys as our starting three receivers, it's what I've been talking about since day one. It's not that we weren't going to have any transfers. Dawson's a transfer, but he's a Colorado kid. Great fit. And then Braden Monroe and Carver Cheeks were recruited as freshmen as part of our first class. And they've just developed. I mean, Carver was a safety. And now he's leading one of the leaders in the league.
I still think he has such a fascinating story, and we've talked yeah. about the portal stuff, but even just the transition of position too. I mean, you gotta be selfless, I think. Really selfless to be a UNC Bear.
Absolutely.
With your philosophy.
I'm on it. I don't know what they think about me in their private moments, what they say, but there's nobody that wouldn't say that I'm not 100% authentic and honest with them. I mean, we moved Carver to safety and then back to receiver when he really came strong with his opinion and was really willing to walk away from a scholarship. I've talked to Braden since day one. We recruited him about, I don't know if you're safety, linebacker, running back, receiver. We'll give you a chance to start out where you want to start. That's not what always players want to hear. You know, mm-hmm. the recruiting pitch of the, you know, du jour out there right now is like, look, here's an inducement. Here's several thousand dollars just to sign with us. And we promise you we're going to throw you this many passes and you're going to be our starting X receiver or whatever the situation is. Yeah, that's not the Bears. That's not how this team's been built.
Can we talk about this defense too? The run game got going for Idaho, but for the most part, I mean, especially early, you guys were doing all the right things, and a guy we've talked about a lot on this show who had a monster freshman year just is continuing that, but Cam Chapa also gets the co-defensive player of the week on the Big Sky. What an excellent player.
It all starts with that secondary, and Cam's the leader. I've told you before, you can come, you come by the facility well after practice is done and the coaches are in their staff rooms and grinding on the video and a game plan, practice plan, et cetera. And the players are running their own meetings, and Cam runs one of those meetings. Like you know, I've been in position group meetings where there's two coaches. Like sometimes you've got a interior line coach and then a tackles tight ends coach, and they meet in the same room. Well, whoever's got the clicker, an old coaching adage is whoever's got the clicker is the one running the meeting. Mm-hmm. That's the coach with the voice. Because it's really hard to chime in when the other coach is reversing and fast forwarding, and you know they're in control. And Cam takes that, and you know he's quizzing the guys and he's telling them, you know, walking through scenarios. It all starts for us on defense with the secondary. And that sometimes is where our weakness has been stopping the run consistently, because when you play man to man in the secondary, you're going to be gapped out in the front. There's not a lot, you know, we don't have 22 eyes. We don't have 11 guys always looking at the football. We've got guys looking at their man. And so we've got to be really gap sound up front. And when we are, you see those stuff, our stuff rate is good, but we've, you know, when we get out of a gap, it can be, you know, what normally against a zone defense might be a 4 or 5 yard run can turn into an 8 to 12 yard run. And that's where we really need to shore it up, is just being more gap sound, getting off blocks, dominating the front better.
You're going to be tested big time this weekend on that run front, because that's Sacramento State. I mean, they're putting their numbers look like Air Force numbers of old. Air Force is throwing the ball a lot this year. But they don't pass very much. They're going to be focused on that ground game, and they got a lot of dudes that can carry the ball too.
Yeah, 3 100-yard rushers last week
alone.
Yeah, in their last game, the quarterback gets involved, and you know they're plus one. They have at times 4 guys lined up in the offensive backfield. We've got to be so disciplined with our eyes. It's going to be a major test, a major challenge for us this week to stop that run game.
Without giving us the game plan, but you said, you know, that's kind of, if there is a weakness on this defense, it might be some of that on the run stop portion so far in the season. So what is that message? How do you slow this rushing attack down?
It's, you know, I hate to be boring about it or give a disappointing answer, but it's fundamental football. It's playing lower than the opponent. It's getting off blocks. It's being gap sound. It's keeping our eyes where they need to be, and then tackling really well. We call that on defense. We call that tackling joints. We're gonna tackle the joints of the player. We're not up, you know, grabbing shoulder pads and stuff like that. We want to be down into the joints, the meaty joints of a player, the hips, and tackle really well. Keep our feet moving. Drive them to the ground.
This is going to be a fun one. I believe this is the Big Sky Conference game of the week too. I saw that on, I'm throwing a bunch of just random things at you, Coach, but that's how, this is what's so cool, is like when you win a few games, and especially when, even in the losses, which I take a lot from the losses, and I look at how competitive you were in those losses, and I know you don't want to hear that, and I know that's not something we did really well in the losses, but every single time people watch a UNC Bears football game this season, they're in for a game. Every single time. And that's what happens. And then when you start breaking through and getting those wins, you get votes in the top 25. Suddenly the 7 o'clock game, ESPN Plus, suddenly that's like, oh, this is the game of the week. Winner of this game might actually be ranked. You start getting all those, and we'll see what happens. But for now, it's a really cool thing. And this game, it certainly deserves that title of the Big Sky Conference game of the week.
Uncharted territory for us.
Yeah.
And we're going to find out if we're mature enough to handle it. You know, Sacramento State still has a lot of guys on that roster who have Big Sky Championship rings. They're used to playing in the game of the week. They're used to playing in national games, playoff games. And, but this is not a game either. Like sometimes it's kind of, you know, a week slate of conference games or whatever. And so they kind of, the game of the week as designated by the Big Sky is just the one that Montana State's playing in, no matter who they're playing in.
Yeah.
And the Bears maybe have been in that in the past, but you kind of know when that's the situation. This is the game of the week because both these teams are in it.
Yeah.
Both these teams have life. You know, we're midway through the season and both of these teams have, championship aspirations, playoff aspirations. Both teams certainly on a track of we have to get better, we have to improve. But I believe that's, you know, for any team, that's the number one task of progressing throughout the season. It's not just being a good team, it's becoming a better and better and better team. And I hope we can stay on that track this week.
Do you feel like you're ahead of schedule with this program right now, Coach? Or are you right where you expected to be? That's kind of a loaded question, probably.
Yes, and what's going through my mind is I think about answering your question honestly. We set out to win every game, you know, every week. And so from that perspective, you know, I've just been beat down over the years, and there's no way that I could, you know, sit here and say we are ahead of schedule. We create a plan to win every week. But then if I look at where our culture is at, where our buy-in is at, the extra work that goes on outside of the 20 hours per week that I can schedule for these players, the extra work in the weight room, you come by our facility at any time of day, and there are guys putting in extra work. And from that perspective, I didn't know when that would occur because I can't force it. If I force it, I'm in violation and we lose practice. The NCAA will take practice time away from us, take opportunities away, take recruits away. These guys, they're building that culture, on their own. We have players that are out there for 45 minutes to an hour after practice working on their own. No coaches around. We have players that go into the weight room after practice, after they already lifted in the morning, getting extra lifts. We have, as I said, nighttime player run meetings, and then they turn around at 7 a.m. for the mandatory meeting that we have the very next morning. So they are, as we say in the coaching world, these guys are ate up with football. And from that perspective, I don't dictate the timeline on that. And I'm really excited about the team that I get to coach this year.
We've been doing this podcast for a while now. Are we over 2 years? Is that right?
Okay. We started at the, on January, in January. So we started after I'd been on the job exactly 1 year.
1 year. Okay. And you talked a lot in that time about the culture. You talked so much about it. And we were talking about guys staying up late playing poker. We were talking about no names. We won't get specific names, but guys that were working odd jobs out late doing whatever. And at the time it was like, I don't remember the percentage, but it was like a certain percentage feels like they're buying in, but then there's another percentage that feels like they're not buying in. It's that percentage we worry about dragging the middle guys down that haven't fully committed, but they're kind of on the fence. I listened to you talk week after week and that now I'm hearing something completely different.
Right.
I am so blown away and fascinated because I've never experienced this to do this podcast, but to actually feel a culture change. It sounds so cliche if I were to throw it out and say, well, with the Broncos, there's a culture. I don't know that. I don't know what's being said. I don't know what they experienced, but you've opened that door for us. And it's just fascinating to hear how you sound now compared to how you sounded when we started this thing.
Yeah. Again, no names, but, I wasn't aware for almost the first several months, on this job that there was a football bar in town where our players worked. Some of our best players worked and let other guys in for free. And people, there were some people I heard later, some of the female athletes in the department, you know, liked to go there because of it and other ones didn't like to go there. Some of the students on campus, oh, that's the football bar. And it just was crushing to me in that moment because I had been preaching about all the things that make a winner. And the biggest mentor that I had in that is Jim Harbaugh. You want to know his secret to turning around programs? It's just getting guys to care and invest. We call it the gas, the give a shit factor.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that everybody was with me, you know, and then I realized, I'm love bombing these guys. We've got a big percentage of this group that's the big night at the what was formerly known as the football bar in town, the club is a probably better word for it, is Wednesday nights. And so we went from that where, you know, a lot of guys were kind of, you know, hiding that or exercising their right to live their own life. I get 20 hours that I get to dictate and they have every right to do whatever they want with the rest, right? But it's really hard to build a team in Greeley that doesn't have a gas factor.
Yeah.
As high as the other teams in the conference. So I told you this a few weeks ago, but several weeks ago before our first game, it was Wednesday after practice, and unscripted, didn't ask for it, Peter Castelli stands up after my speech and goes, hey, nobody's going out tonight. Mm. That's not what we're about. And I thought, okay, this team, this is going
to
be
that,
different.
That's giving me goosebumps to hear that.
Yeah.
Because you take, I mean, that's got to feel almost like, betrayal, like you're getting cheated on because you're pushing this message of, guys, we got to clean it up. If we want to do something, yeah, we can keep winning two games a year if we want, keep going to the bars and do that stuff. But if we want to change, and then you find out, oh, there's an actual bar, whatever, that's tough. Now you got guys standing up saying, hey, nobody's doing anything crazy. You know, we're staying committed.
I was gutted. I had put so much into preaching, teaching these guys everything that I know about turning around a program, about overcoming the odds. And nobody had the courage. I mean, there were people in the department, you know, staffers, administrators, people in town. Nobody had the courage to say, here's what's going on. Here's mm-hmm. what you gotta, I mean, we had, yeah, I can't even go into detail because things have changed so much. personnel, you know, administrative personnel, Darren Dunn, Andy Feinstein they've just been arm in arm with me from day one. And, you know, so I'm glad that they can enjoy some of this and see a light at the end of the tunnel. Things are starting to turn. We're not there, but things are starting to turn. And the biggest part of that is the players, they have that give a shit factor now. Two swear words today on this podcast.
Well, we're good. It's all, you can say whatever you want on the podcast, Coach. It's the, when you jump in there with the fellas, that's when you got to be careful. No, I love it because it's raw and it's honesty and you did feel that sense of betrayal. And now it's suddenly like, I got guys taking over at the end of my speeches saying, let's go out and do the right things. Over the summer, spring, summer, you brought in a lot of players. We talked to a lot of players. And you ask them, like, and I know they're not going to tell me, I like to go get hammered every day.
Right.
They're also, what do you like to do in your spare time? They have to stop and think about it.
Yeah.
Because they're like, well, I mean, it's football. Fishing. I like to fish. I like to read. You know, I'm getting more and more of those guys from you. And that, again, I don't expect players to come on the podcast and tell me they like to go out to the bars until 2 in the morning. But they go into detail about these healthy hobbies that they're into. And it goes back to like the camping trip that you guys do, the bonding that guys are experiencing. You see it on their faces when they talk about it. It's really fascinating to see. And I really appreciate you opening that door for us, that window into the program.
I mean, I've got my, vices and struggles and mistakes on a daily basis. And I expect all of our players to as well. But, you know, the recognition, the openness to talk about it, to want to be better, to not hide it. And just the way we inspire each other to be the best we can be, you know, our coaches, you know, every time we see a little breakthrough, you see them staying later and later and later into the night because we know it's more important to the players. And so it inspires us. We have more energy mm-hmm. for the task. And the only reason we're going home at night is we know that if we don't stack up a decent night's sleep night after night after night, then we're not going to be as good for the guys the next week or on game day or whatever. And I mean, that's what I think we have right now. And win or lose on Saturday, that's built. That part is built. We're going to, what you've seen all season long and what you'll see forever around here is a team that'll fight for all four quarters, a team that's humble, and a team that, you know, has a culture of like, we want to take care of ourselves. We want to put everything we can into this. Not that everybody's living perfect. Wouldn't expect that. But they are putting a lot into this sport right now.
When you got a quarterback that's saying, how do I be a better number two? You got Hank Gibbs, who was a number two quarterback last year. He says, I just want to play football. I just want to help this team as much as I possibly can. You got your, you know, Peter Castelli, who's hurt, standing up telling everybody, hey, we're not going out and doing anything crazy, still leading. You got a Carver Cheeks guy that says, hey, I'm entering the portal. Oh no, I made a mistake. I want to come back, but I will work from the ground up and, be that asparagus for you and then pop. We got a million of those stories from this crew. And, you know, I talk and follow a lot of other programs in the area, and you just hear some of the selfish stuff that happens. And I'm not trying to knock anybody. I'm so blown away by this attitude and how these players are responding to your mentality.
Yeah, tough times build tough men. And I think at some point it made more sense, the messages I was preaching. And ironically, I'm not doing a lot of that anymore.
Yeah.
I recognize it with our guys when I'm speaking to the team. You know, you'll hear me remind them, hey, we live clean. We pour everything we've got into this. You got the rest of your life to stay out all night. This is your only opportunity to do this sport.
I don't remember who, I think it was an offensive lineman we had in here that was like, yeah, I saw a coach had some cans of beers and around his fridge. And I was like, what the heck? He's preaching this thing, man. What's going on over there? Oh, they're the non-alcoholic beers and the working out with the guys. And I know we've made a big deal about that. It's awesome. I love it. All those things do make a massive impact. When you're practicing what you preach.
No, it was Frank Thompson.
Frank Thompson. Thank you.
I had the players over to my house for a barbecue and, luckily we've got a nice size yard so we can fit 100 plus guys back there, 150 with coaches and staff and all that. And yeah, Frank was snooping around. He's a very serious, he's a player of the game, offensive lineman of the game this last week, brought tremendous physicality to the game. But yeah, he was snooping around trying to see if I practice what I preach. And then Frank's very serious. And so in his conversation, he came and stood about 6 inches from me. And I wasn't sure, is this guy going to knock me out here? What's going on? What kind of discussion are we going to have? And I think he was just trying to keep it on the down low because there were a lot of people there. And he just said, I saw your non-alcoholic beer. I have tremendous respect for a man who practices what he preaches. And that's Frank right there.
Man. I love that he brought that up on the podcast.
He's a 55-year-old in a 25-year-old's body.
Yeah, it just goes to show you that stuff matters. You know, they're paying attention to it. Coach, congrats on last weekend. I know you're moving on, turning the page. I'm going to let you jump on Good Morning NoCo with the fellas in there. But we're so pumped. And I cannot wait for Saturday night. I am looking forward to this game. Very excited about it. So best of luck to you, my friend.
Thank you, Brady.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.